We come here on Fridays and we learn Nevi'im. And last week we finished Sefer Yehoshua. And now we start Sefer Shofetim, the book of Judges. Shofetim, Perek Aleph. Vayi Achare Mot Yehoshua. So that's the end of the book of Yehoshua. We read that Yehoshua, Alav Shalom, he passes away at the young age of 110. Vayishalu b'nei Yisrael b'Hashem nemor. At this point, they have to ask Hashem. Asking Hashem is the Urim v'Tumim. Sounds like that when Yehoshua was around, they didn't have to ask the Urim v'Tumim any questions. Only a Haremot Yehoshua, then already they started to ask Bahashem. The Malbim actually makes that point when he says, "Behaye Yehoshua lo hatzrichu lishol beurim v'tumim." They didn't need the urim v'tumim in terms of Yehoshua. Yehoshua sidera kol al pi devrei Hashem. Yehoshua had a direct line directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But after Yehoshua passed away, so already there was a yirida. Now they needed already to communicate with the Kohen through the Urim V'Tumim. What was the first question they asked the Urim V'Tumim? Mi ya'ale lanu ela kena'ani b'techila lehilachem bo. So, if you remember, that at the end of the book of Yehoshua, Yehoshua tells them we're not finished the war yet. Although Yehoshua took 7 years to conquer the land and then to divide it, but there were still pockets of Goyim that were living amongst Klal Yisrael and they needed to be rooted out. Every tribe had their share, had their helek, the Nahala. But in the Nahala, there was Goyim. So even though they settled it, they had to rout them out. So now the question was, who's going to go first? Rashi says, "Mi ya'ale lanu el Kena'ani al mekomot shepalnu begoral ba'adayin lo nechbeshu." So he says there was even certain parts that they didn't even conquer, that the goral already gave it to them, but they didn't conquer it yet. So which tribe is going to be the first? The first one. This is a very, very important, who goes first. Because depending on who goes first, that's going to create the morale for the rest of the people. What it means to say is that if the first war that is fought after Yehoshua is lost, so then it creates a bad precedent, the morale for the future. So that's why the pasuk says, "Mi ale lanu." You know, this decision is going to affect all of us, lanu, because you know, depending on who goes first, that's going to affect lanu. It's going to affect everybody else how they feel. So interesting. So it means the Kena'anim was still there. The Kena'anim was still in Eretz Yisrael, and we had to root them out. Of course, we know that the Kena'ani people are a bad nation. They're filled with abominations. Eretz Yisrael, as a general rule, like the pasuk says, "V'sadikim yirshu ares." Israel can only be conquered if there's kedushat mishpacha, kedushat brit milah, kedushat am Israel. It's a land that's very sensitive to immorality, and that's why, for example, anytime we talk about Israel, you always have to predicate it on kedusha. When Yehoshua, for example, goes into Israel, the first thing they do is take a brit milah. Because the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael needs the Kedusha of the Yesod, of the Brit Milah. That's very, very, very important principles here. that to conquer Eretz Yisrael, it needs not just the best armies, but it needs tremendous amount of, you know, holiness, tahara. So the Kanaani nation, as we know it, was a nation filled with tum'ah. If you remember, even in this week's parasha, we see the roots of Kanaan. This week we're reading Parashat Noah. I don't know if you fellas got to the end of the parasha, but there was a story that happens after the flood. So Noah plants a vineyard or grapes, and it says over here that after he plants the grapes, he got drunk. See the pasuk. The pasuk writes, "Vayachel Noah isha adama." Doctor Baruch Abba. And it says, "Vayitakarim." And he went and he planted a vineyard. Vayesh min ayayin, and he drank from the yayin. Vayishkar, and he got drunk. Can it be that the body of Noah wasn't as strong as it was before the Mabul? Before the Mabul, he was able to drink that. I mean, he knew his levels of drinking, obviously. He didn't intend to get drunk. He intended to drink what he normally drinks. After the Mabul, the bodies became weaker. And if you make a point, the Rishonim point this out, that life expectancies went down after the Mabul. You don't see anybody living, you know, after the Mabul 950 years like before the Mabul. Something happened to the air, you know, the greenhouse effect. Something happened after the Mabul where the people started getting weaker.
Also, he worked very hard.
They worked hard in the Teva as well. That's why, by the way, the Torah allows Noah, after they get off the Teva, to eat meat. The Rishonim point out that also. And then now they needed protein. Before that, they didn't need the protein. The world was so strong, and the fruits were so strong, and everything was so strong and fortified. You didn't need to have meat. It wasn't necessary. But now, all of a sudden, right after they get off the Teva, one of the things that change is that God says to Noah, you know, the menu changed. We read that as well. If you looked in the parasha, it said, "Ach basar benafsho damo lo tochel." Well, you can't eat the blood, but kol remes ashinu chay lachem yelochla ki yerek esem datat lachem et kol. Well, you got everything. The Rashi says, "Shelo ersheti la adam rishon nechol basar." Adam rishon wasn't able to eat basar. Ela yerek esem, only, you know, vegetables. Adam rishon was a vegetarian. But now he says, "Datat lachem et kol." Okay, they were able to eat everything. So the Or HaChaim HaKadosh gives a few reasons why he was allowed to eat now. Or HaChaim HaKadosh says they weren't able to eat David Menachai. That's true. Okay, but they were able to eat meat. So something changed. That's my point. Something changed at the end of the flood. The diet obviously changed as well. So then the question is, so Noah drinks. And what happens once he gets drunk? Vayidgal betoch aholo. She says, Vayidgal, he was rolling, you know, in his tent, and his drunkenness. Vayar Ham Abi Kena'an. So Ham, who was the father of Kena'an, et ervat aviv. So he sees the nakedness of his father. So that she right away says, Yeshomim Sarso. Some say he actually sodomized his father. Or Sarso means he castrated him. Yeshomim Ravo. That he carried that he was with him. He sodomized him. So you see already the roots of Kena'an. It's in Ham. The roots in Kena'an are in Ham. So that's why you see you have to get rid of Kena'an. Kena'an represents the Tum'ah of Arayot, of this behavior over here, the father. For whatever reason why he did it. So that's why the Torah in Sefer Shofetim reminds us, you must get rid of Kena'an. You must get rid of this Kelipa over here. Now the Mekubalim write that there's seven nations, you know, Kena'ani, Haiti, Amori, Perizi, etc. And they're connected to the seven Midot. Seven Midot is Chesed, Gevura, Teferet, Nesa, Chod, Yesod, Malchut. And connected to the seven Midot of Kedusha, you have the seven Midot of the Kelipa. So that means Chesed is connected Kena'ani. Kena'an is Chesed, the Kelipa. And we know that Chesed, you know, if you use it for the right way, so then Chesed is used for sanctioned love of mankind. You do kindness, hospitality. Bikur Cholim, these are all forms of Chesed. This is Chesed the Kedusha. That you use the love that a person has, or the mercy that a person has inside of him in order to benefit others in a proper way. Of course, then you have Chesed of the Kelipa. Chesed of the Kelipa, so that leads to immorality. We have a Chumash. You have a... Thank you, Morris. If you look in Perashat Aharemot, in the Aharemot, already it lists all the different, you know, Arayot. So the Pasuk says over here, an interesting language. The language of the Torah over here is as follows. Let's see the lashon over here. Maybe it's in Kiddushim. Kiddushim also, by the way, has the Arayot Avotai. Let's not forget. Both those Perashiyot, it has the Arayot. And it is in here. Over here it says, Ve'ish asher yikachat achoto. It's in Kiddushim. V'ish asher yikach ta'achoto, bar menan, the guy says incest. The guy takes his sister. Bat aviv or bat imo. Either one. Bat aviv or bat imo. V'ra'a et ervata. V'ra'a et ervata. So he sees her nakedness. V'hi teret ervato, and vice versa. So the Torah says, Chesed who? What's a Chesed? What's a nice Chesed? Very nice Chesed. So when they tell you, do you do Chesed? The mere guy says, yeah, of course I do Chesed. The Torah says, this is what Chesed is. So what kind of Chesed is this over here? What kind of chesed? So the art scroll over here explains the word chesed, disgrace. Literally the word means kindness. A strange term in relation to incest. It is intended to answer the question, if it is immoral for a brother and sister to live together, then why did God permit Cain and Abel to marry their sisters? The answer is that it was a kindness to God to allow that to the human race to go on. Understand the difference?
That was the exception.
That was the exception. According to the Radak, the word chesed has two meanings, kindness and disgrace. The two are related. Kindness and disgrace are related.
Wow.
Because the disgrace of immorality is the product of overindulgence. Someone who is too anxious to give pleasure and is reluctant to discipline him or herself or others is in danger of lapsing into the sin of immorality. It's a very, very big yesod there.
Wow.
You're learning a big psychological lesson over here. Sometimes, you know, person unrestricted chesed leads to immorality. Huh? You have a lot of cases of these, you know, these counselors that are coming to counsel people. And they're such chesed, they want to help the lady and they want to help her and they feel so bad. And then she's crying. And they say, oh, this poor thing, this woman is distraught. Say, come, let me give you a massage just to take some of the, let me give you a hug, exactly. Let me give you a hug just to take some of the pressure off. Hasba shalom, Hashem shamayim. It's part of the job. This is chesed. He's driven by chesed. You know, he wants to help, volunteer.
And he's charging her.
Now he's charging her also for it, because he's doing a chesed. He's doing a service. He has no benefit. Mm-hmm. It's all your colleagues, you see that? It's all your colleagues, that's it. The prices go up. So if you look in the book of Exodus, or Genesis, Genesis is also a mention of this era botai. Let's see how this works here, if we have the right book. Oh, see, Art Scroll Genesis. We don't have Art Scroll Genesis here. Own book. Page is 371. No, I don't have it here. It's a separate volume. It has its own book. Anyway, the point is, that's what chesed is. So they say that Canaan is the first of the seven nations. He's keneged chesed. Chesed of the Kelipah. That's why you look at the difference between the chesed of Abraham and the chesed of Yishmael, for example. Chesed of Abraham is considered chesed of the Kiddushah. And the chesed of Yishmael is called chesed of the Kelipah. That's why you see Abraham Abinu's chesed is achnasat orchim and you know, he does the Brit Milah at 99 years old. And he's willing to sacrifice himself. And it says, even with his own wife, he didn't recognize his wife. It says, he never saw her before. He saw her reflection. He noticed. There was no need for him to notice it. But when it became a liability, then he had to do something with her when he went down to Egypt. So he said, Abraham Abinu was Kurdish. His chesed was under control. Chesed Abraham means the controlled chesed, the restricted chesed that's limited to helping people, but not to Abraham gayere to anashim v'saya asaram gayere to anashim. That's separate seating. Avraham Avinu didn't go and now stop being Megayer the ladies. Chesed, I want to show them, you know, about God, about religion. You have to be very careful. So one has to be very careful that his chesed doesn't go from, you know, kindness to disgrace. It's a fine line. The line that separates kindness and disgrace is very, very fine. If a person goes over that line, he could be involving himself in disgraceful way. So the Torah is telling you over here, when a guy goes with his sister, it probably started from, you know, chesed, wants to help his sister, whatever it may be, before you know it, an ancestral relationship. Chesed has to do with disgrace. And that's all alayot. It comes from that midah of... So Yishmael is the chesed of the kedipah, the Zohar says. You know, so you see the Yishmael, Yishmael, they're dressed, you know, from head to toe, and they have, you know, two eyeballs. But chesed the kedipah, we don't have to elaborate. You understand, Rabotai? You know, you go look at those guys that blew up the World Trade Center in the name of God. Where were they the night before? They were in some club, you know, involving them. So, and their whole understanding of reward is what? You know, immorality. That's their whole goal is to get to that madriga of immorality over there. Whatever the number is, it keeps on moving with the inflation. Now it's at 72 already.
What was it?
I thought it was at 70. Now it went to 72. It's possible. It keeps on moving up as the market fluctuates. There's probably an index we can follow it on. Anyway, so you're telling me now that's chesed of the kelipah. So kenan is the chesed of the kelipah. That's kenan. The word kenan, I think Sfat Emet says this. Kenan, if you want to interpret the word, kenan is a soher, a merchant. That's what the word means, the root of the word. Kenan. Kenan is a, you know, somebody that exchanges merchandise for money. Sfat Emet says that's what Kenan is. He exchanged the chesed of, you know, kindness to the chesed of disgrace. He's a soher. He made a switch. You know, he switched one chesed for the other. So that's, or maybe you're right. Chesed is gematria, what, 72? So maybe that's where they get it from, the 72. The chesed of disgrace is gematria 72. So maybe Emil is right from that. Anyway, the point is that that's also, that's why, right after Yeshua dies, the war in Asia is not over. You have to root out Kena'an. Root out the Tum'ah of the Chesed, of the Kelipah. Because as long as it's there, Eretz Yisrael cannot be, inherited properly, cannot be established properly. So again, the question is, who is going to, you know, fight against the Kena'an? Who's going to be the first one? Mi Aleh. So the pasuk again says, "Mi yale lanu ela kenaani betachila." All right. Now, in these words, "Mi yale lanu ela kenaani." Well, which word would you say is the auxiliary word here? Usually, the word el is an auxiliary word. Yeah, it's a helping word. So if you take out the word el, because that's the auxiliary word, mi is a mem, ya'ale is a yud, lanu is a lamid, and hakenani is a he. So it's a shetevot mila, which is hinting to us that's the kedusha of the mila that they had to, you know, they had to fight against. Now, it goes without saying that in the times of Noah, for example, which is the parasha that we're reading, so their issue was arayot, as we know. It ki yishchit kol basar et darko ala aretz. there was ashchata, there was a destruction of the morality code. And the Mefarshim say that immorality begins or is connected to the koach of the dibur, the koach of the speech of a person, that the sins of immorality begin in the mouth. As we said many times, that peh is gematria mila. Peh is 85, mila is 85. So it's possible that the sins in the times of the Mabul also reached its immorality, but it started in the Lashon, and then of course could trickle down to the Mila. Noah, of course, was a tzaddik. Tzaddik means a tzaddik in that area. So therefore, obviously, he had Kedushat HaPeh. He had Kedushat HaLashon. That was how he got saved. After saved, if Noah's Brit Milah was Kadosh because he was a tzaddik, it must mean that his Lashon was. Because they go hand in hand together. That's why when God tells Noah to build the Teva, he tells him to build it according to certain dimensions. Just to review the dimensions, I forget them from year to year. I think it was 30 amot high. U'shloshim amakomata. That's a lamed. And shlosh me'ot orech, 300 length, that's a sheen. And hamishim amma ruhba, 50, the length, that's a lamed, a sheen, I'm not sure the width, a lamed, a sheen, and a nun, which spells the word lashon. But that explains the dimensions of the teva. The dimensions of the teva is lashon. In order to hint to us, that was really the root of their immorality. It didn't start in immorality. It starts in diburim, and from the dibur, then already it comes to other things. So therefore, a person has to be careful. The lesson of the teva is also shemet lashon. That's why God tells Noah to build a teva. The word teva in Hebrew has two meanings. Teva can mean an ark, and teva means a word. So therefore, Noah gets saved by the word. You guys ever hear the saying, saved by the bell? Noah got saved by the word, by the teva. Because since his Lashon must have been good, and their Lashon was bad, so that led them to morality. In any event, we see over here that the question was, who is going to be the one that's able to overcome the Kelipa of Kenan? That was the first question that they had to ask the Urim v'Tumim, In the times of the judges, the shofetim. Vayomer Hashem, so Hashem said, meaning Hashem is the Urim v'Tumim, Yehuda Ya'ale. That's the answer. Yehuda Ya'ale, Shevet Yehuda. You pick the strongest tribe. Now, if we had to explain it, why is Yehuda? But based on what we learned earlier, that you want to make sure that you have a sure win. The first, especially in a short series, the first game is key. So you want to make sure that the first win after Yeshua's death is going to be a victory. It's going to be a resounding victory. So they say Yehuda Ya'aleh. Yehuda goes first. But if we can explain it based on what we're learning, if you remember that Yehuda, of course, is referred to as a lion. Gur Ariyeh Yehuda. Yehuda is the leader, the melech of the tribes. In Judaism, melech doesn't only mean, he's the king, he sits in the front row, or he has the crown on his head. But melech represents the self-control. The self-control. First he has to be a melech on himself before he can be a melech on others. That's why when David, a melech, when he slipped in the story of Bathsheba, so he lost his kingdom. cannot be a melech on others if you cannot be a melech on yourself. Emil probably has something in the, you know, in the karate or one of that philosophy that he studies. I'm sure there's something that talks about that self mastery. You know, before you start dominating on others, you have to have self control of yourself. That's the real melech. Of course, we've said many times that it's mind over heart. Mind over heart. Melech is Rashi Tevot, Moach, Lev, and Kaved. The Moach is on top, and then the Lev comes second, and the Kaved. But the opposite is Kalem, is the destruction. And the Kaved runs it, and Kaved is the blood. It's the heat of the person. That's where the blood is, not in the liver. The blood rushes to the heart, and the heart tells the brain what to do. And that's the destruction of the person. That's called Kalem. The opposite of Kalem is Melech, where it's the mind tells the heart what to do, and the heart controls the blood where to go. And that person is a controller. So that's really the secret of the word Melech. And since you needed somebody over here to fight the Kina'ani, which is the Kilipa of Chesed, so therefore you need somebody who's in control of himself. You cannot let somebody, Chas v'Shalom, who's weakened. Understand my point? You have to take the one that has the most self-control in order to, and that is Yehuda. Yehuda Ya'aleh. Where do you see that? The time is short because we have the Brit Milah. Haim, you let us know when the Brit is, right? You'll just maybe speak to one of our members that are there. They didn't ask me to hold the Sidur today, so I don't know. It's not critical that I go. Although I don't know who else is qualified to hold the Sidur at a Brit Milah. I'm highly trained from Acham Baruch. He taught me how to hold the Sidur. When they ask a rabbi to please can officiate a Brit Milah, I mean the whole Sidur. That's what it is. So we have to close the book and go there and point to Hashem. You ever see how I do it? I point to Hashem Melech and you pat him on the back a few times. It's all chokmah. But I was not, they did not ask my services today to hold the Sidur. At least I don't think so. Yeah, exactly. Nonetheless, if I'd like to be there for the actual Brit Milah itself. So anyway, the Arizal writes that the four elements, of course, the four elements are earth, wind, fire, and water, and each one of the elements, if left uncontrolled, so it can bring destruction to the world. And a human being is made up of the four elements as well, and you have to keep the balance. But if a person has too much or too little of one of the elements, it can cause him to have, for example, too much fire is anger, brings him to chaos or to gava. The fire goes up, so he has to keep the temperature, the right temperature. A person has too much earth, that's laziness. It makes a person heavy and sluggish. He doesn't want to get up, doesn't want to move around. You have wind. Well, that's we know a lot of long-winded people. You know, a lot of talking and a lot of nonsense. And that's they have too much wind in them, windbag. And then you have mayim. So that Arizal says that Mayim represents the source of all pleasures is in Mayim. The biggest pleasure that we have is food, for example. Food is all water. Everything comes from the water. The water brings all the pleasures out of the ground. Even when it comes to immorality, King Solomon compares immorality to water. When he says, Mayim genuvim yimtaku. What does he mean when he says "Mayim genuvim yimtaku"? Forbidden waters taste sweeter. Now, those forbidden waters—he wasn't talking about if somebody, you know, heists a Poland Springs truck. The stolen waters he was talking about over there are you know, the forbidden, you know, forbidden fruits. We're talking about immorality. So therefore, whenever we see an abundance of mayim, that array is an onesh, it's a punishment for immorality. Now I'm shocked because in Florida and the panhandle, there's such moral people.
Yes.
You know, you wonder why, I mean, the two holiest cities, you know, Bnei Berak and Mexico Beach. So it's hard to imagine that, you know, these places can get inundated with floods. But nonetheless, we don't question the... God. So any event, so the flooding of the waters is a punishment for immorality. That's why the great flood that we read in this week's parashah Noah, kishhit kol basar darkol ha'aretz, and the waters, it's either you control the water, or if you don't control the water, which is the ta'aba, it's gonna control you, it's gonna take over you. That's the way it is, Rabotai. I'm sorry to tell you. So Noah and his family that were moral, so they floated above the water. You know, they were above the water. Anybody that floats above the water, that means he has control of himself. He's above the ta'avot. So it's interesting to note that which tribe do you see has control over the water? When the Jewish people are coming out of Mitzrayim, Mitzrayim also, they were to'avot, and Mitzrayim were abominable people. Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim also comes from Ham, by the way.
What?
Right? Mitzrayim is called Admat Bnei Ham. Same line of to'avot Mitzrayim. Gemara says that in Makat Bechorot, there wasn't a house that didn't have a casualty. Now, how could that be? There should only be one firstborn in every house. But if the man is going around, so it's a firstborn from him, firstborn, you know, from that father, from that lady. So therefore, there's a lot of... A lot of crossbreeding that was taking place over there. And as a result, a lot of firstborns. And Bayit Asher in Shamet. So they were abominable people. And that's why their punishment is what? They get drowned in the water. So again, the abominable people of immorality finds themselves under the water. That's the way. And who's the tribe that split the water for Klal Yisrael? Well, you remember when they got the Yamsuf? Who jumped in first? Nachshon ben Aminadav lematei Yehuda. So you see that Yehuda had such mastery of himself. I had to be, otherwise you cannot split the water unless you have the mastery of yourself. You understand the way we're saying it over here, Rabbi? Not only that, if I may say a chidush to our members that are here today. Rabbeinu Ari writes, or Rabbi Menachem Azariah Mipano, that Noah's neshama, you know, journeyed throughout history. His neshama found itself in different tzaddikim. Well, the pasuk says, "Ele toledot Noah. Noah is tzaddik." And there's only somebody else in history that we know is called Sadiq. That's Yosef Sadiq. So the Rambam Pano says that somehow the neshama of Noah finds itself in Yosef Sadiq at a later time. Interestingly enough, by Noah it says Venoah Matzahin. And if I'm not mistaken, by Yosef also it says something about Hen. I could be wrong. You remember when? So what are you saying?
He had a shame when he walked through the town.
Oh yeah, that's what it said. So the pasuk says when they put him in jail, Vayi Hashem et Yosef, Vayet elav Hasid, Vayitin Hino be'ene Sar bet Asohar. So they both had a hand. Noah was in the Teva for 12 months. Yosef was in prison for 12 years. So you see already there's a similarities in the life of Noah and in the life of Yosef. That's not my topic today, Rabotai. But if you go start to see similarities, both of them, the Midrash says that anytime you see the word Haya, that means he was the parnasador. He was the one that supplied food for the entire generation. The pasuk says, "Ele toledot Noah, Noah, ish sadik tamim haya bedorotav." And by Yosef it says, "VeYosef haya beMitzrayim." And the midrash says that both Noah and Yosef they supplied the world with the parnasah. I'd like to explain why for a minute, if you have a minute. What's the zichut of Noah and Yosef that they're able to sustain the world? What zichut is that? How does that work? If you remember, when we learned the book of Yehoshua, so you remember in the beginning of the book of Yehoshua, we learned about the lady called Rahab HaZona. Rahab HaZona. What does Rahab HaZona mean? So the Mefashim explained it over there that she was a shopkeeper and she sold mezonot. That's one interpretation. Zona is an interesting lashon. Zona can either mean Mazon, Lashon Zan, or Lashon Zona is immorality, harlotry. Funny how that we picked the same word. Again, we're talking about again words that have dual meanings, like Chesed means kindness and disgrace. The word Zona, we're finding out today, has also dual meaning. It could either mean, you know, sustenance, or it could either mean, you know, the other thing. And the explanation the Mefarshim say is that Shlomo HaMelech warned us that ki bi'ad isha zona ad ki kar lahe, that if a person goes after zona, so he gives up his mezonot. You switch this zona for that zona. So, no problem. You want to go after immorality? No problem. God says, you pick which mezonot you want to have. You want to have this zona, you want to have that zona. You want to have mezonot in your pocket, or you want a mezonot in your fun, your immorality. But you can have both. So it says it'll bankrupt you. Understand? Give me ad isha zona, because of isha zona, ad kikala, he doesn't have a love of bread even. So therefore, I understand Yosef HaSadiq, how he becomes the panas of the whole generation, because Yosef is able to overcome himself in the story of Ishet Potiphar. So once already he gave up that inyan of znut, what ends up happening? All the mizonot now comes through Yosef. See how we're learning? I mean, the reaction, we're not getting the right reaction because it's still the morning yet. We didn't get up yet. But if you understood what we're just saying over here, that's in order to be the mezim. It, you have to first control that.
Could have went either way.
Could have went either way, exactly. So Yosef, it's nothing for nothing. When you see Yosef has the ability to be mezin the whole world, he earned that. It didn't come stale, he got lucky, and he won the lottery. So that was earned already when he was tested. Understand? Wow. By the way, Noah is no different. Noah, because he was a tzaddik, and his family was Baruch Hashem, untainted from that generation. So God says, you can be mezin the whole world. Remember, the whole world comes from Noah. Noah fed all the animals. All the world is fed through Noah. Why do you have such a zikut to be the mezin of the whole world? Because Noah had the, so therefore, the connection Noah and Yosef is very, very strong connection. They both have that same koach. So therefore, Noah is put on the Teman. He floats above the water. Noah is above the water. He's above the Ta'avot. Who else floated above the water? Hazak Baruch. If you remember, when they left Egypt, what activated the sea to split? Two things. It's true, Yehuda went in. But if you remember, Hazak Baruch, the Aron of Yosef was buried deep into the Nile. So you remember that story there. And they threw into a paper there that said Ale Shur. Yosef was compared to a shore. And all of a sudden what happened?
It rose up
and the Pasuk says Hayamra'a Vayanos. When the Yam saw the Aron of Yosef. Why? Because the one that rose above his nature on the Mayim rises above the Mayim. The Mayim saw it, the Mayim. Understand the depth of how this is happening over here? Understand the story over here? And that's exactly what happened to you. So the roots of Yosef actually in Noah, and they're both kings of the world. Noah was the king of the world. Yosef was the king of the world as well. Yehuda was also a king. And that proves to us, Rabotai. Any news on the Brit Mila? Not yet. You understand? Oh, so therefore you see the roots of Yosef or Noah. Both have the same what you call it situations. They have the same
commonalities
between them. Hazak Baruch is exactly the point. They both have hand. They're both in prison for 12 years. They both become the panas of the generations, and the key of it all is because they're able to overcome their nature, and therefore they rise above the waters. So that's already a great Musaf. So what I was going to say was that indicates to me that story of Yehuda and Tamar obviously has nothing to do with Chas v'Shalom, any form of immorality. Because even when Yaakov Abinu is rebuking his children before he passes away, I mean, he makes no mention of that. I mean, he gets Reuven on changing the furniture. He gets Shimon and Levi on killing, Shechem. He didn't mince words. And all of a sudden, it gets to Yehuda. And Yehuda backed off. He was scared. And on the contrary, what does Yaakov do? He praises him for that. If you look at the Targum on there, it says, Yehuda ata yoducha achecha. The Targum's Lashon is, at odeta vela beheteta. You admitted that it was you and you aren't embarrassed. That's a king. King also is responsible. He takes responsibility. The buck stops here. You took responsibility. You didn't cover it up. It was you. So wait, if it's you, that means you went with Tamar. You went with your daughter-in-law. That wasn't a problem. You boom, however you want to learn it. This was something that was... It brought Mashiach. So how bad could it have been? So you see, Yehuda was a melech first over himself. And as a result, you can be a melech then over others. So that's why when they're looking for a tribe
to start the fight against Kena'an, who was the Kilipa of Chesed, who was the Kilipa of immorality, and we would call, let's put it this way, Rabotai, if somebody that overcomes his urge for immorality is called the Melech, then what would you call somebody that cannot control his urges? You would call him an Eved. And of course, we know in this week's Parasha, what does Noah curse Ham after he does the act of immorality? Arur Kenan, Eved Abadim. It doesn't only mean Eved Abadim is going to be a slave like, you know, Kunta Kinte in Roots. But the slavery over here is he's going to be a man, gonna be a slave to his passions, slave to his desires. So it's very, very interesting. It's very interesting. Noah has the first interaction with Ham. Ham abuses Noah, curses him. And Yosef has the same interaction with Bnei Ham, which is Mitzrayim. Bnei Ham. The same stories repeat themselves over and over. That's like the doctor said, one of the wisest men that I ever met, Dr. Rosenstein, said there's nothing new under the sun. Shlomo HaMelech got it from the doctor, I think. That's the doctor said it. There's nothing new under the sun, as Dr. Rosenstein said. There's a great rabbi called Rav Elchanan of Asherman, Shem Yimkom Damav. He has a famous piece on Noah. He has a lot. For some reason, he talked a lot about Noah. Nothing wrong. So one of the things he talks about in Noah, he has a question. Yeah, the Dora Mabul. So in his piece on Dora Mabul, he writes a famous question. Parashat Noah, Ve'ata kach lecha mikol ma'achal asher ye'achel. God tells Noah, take mikol ma'achal asher ye'achel. Obviously, ma'achal asher ye'achel. Edible food. If it's food, it's edible. No, I would take non-edible food. What does it mean when it says "kach lecha mikol ma'achal asher ye'achel"?
That what you ate?
Ma'achal is food. Asher ye'achel, that you can eat.
Kosher food.
Vaya v'asafta elecha, gather it. Vaya lecha v'lahem le'ochla, and it'll be for you and the animals as food. I mean, he writes "hamilot nirot kemo yeterot." He's got a lot of extra words there. כי כיוון שנצטרך לאסוף מכל מאכל ודאו לצורך אכילה ולא להציע בהם את המיטות. What do you do with the foods? To make the beds with them? Obviously, if you're doing the foods, to eat. והיה לכם לאוכלה. Oh, no, I thought, take food to make the beds. That's the kind of question. You have to tell me, take food, to do what? Or to eat. To eat. To eat. I didn't know that. That's Israeli cereal box. Pour cereal into bowl. Add milk. Put spoon in. Bring to mouth. In the old cereal box, Israel. They used to give you instructions. Israel didn't have cereal. They don't have a saw. What do they do with the box? So they're eating it from the box. They're eating it like Cracker Jacks. So they have to pour it in the bowl. Add milk. Take a spoon. So yeah, this is the source of it. God tells Noah, take food. And the food that you take should be for eating purposes. Hazak Baruch. Hazak Baruch. I plan on saying this tomorrow in the Derash, but I'll say it now to you also. No, you're not sending it out anyways. Nobody can hear it. If you're not here, you won't hear it until tomorrow anyway.
Say it probably in the morning. Shalosh Teudot will say something else, I'm sure. Anyway, so that's what he's asking. So one of the things he says is incredible. Vine yaduwa. Ki kodem ababul hayu teva kol habiruim yoter chazak betov mikivishu akshav yom. Before the Mabul, men were men. People were much stronger. Just look like how long they lived. I mean, I think I saw in the Midrash, anybody know how long Cain lived? Cain is a pre-Mabul. Cain lived 1,656 years.
Whoa.
Yeah, well, okay, prove me wrong. Prove me wrong. He died right before the Mabul. He was born right in the beginning and he died right before the Mabul. That's what it is, Abotai. Do the math. Adam Rishon lived 930. Shet lived 912. Enosh lived 905. The lifespan, the average lifespan was in the 900s.
Yeah.
Kenan lived 910. Mahalalel lived 895. Yered lived 962, Metushelah 969, Methuselah, the oldest man that ever lived. I mean, Noah lived 950.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Noah's wife lived into her 1500s.
Wow.
Yeah, she lived into, she according to the book, she lived at least 1,527 years. That's Noah's wife. So anyway, you see, they lived the long life. And after the flood, the lifespan went down drastically. You don't see any more of these 900ers over there. It's starting to beat me now. Well, I guess you're going to have to wait till tomorrow about that.
Oh.
Look at that. No, Shabbat is Shabbat. I must go to a Brit Milah, Rabotai. I stayed there at least as late as I was. You make sure, I mean, it's not a false alarm.
Doctor,
okay. Rabotai.